today. Why a plan to cut pollution is making people across England so angry. This story starts a few weeks ago. It's 7:30 a.m. on a Thursday morning when I get a phone call from Kieran, who's a milkman.
All right, so it's just Kieran. Listen, I reckon...
Kieran started delivering milk to me during lockdown. Like thousands of others, the pandemic forced him to change his business model when he lost the option of delivering to offices in the city, his biggest customer base. And he had to start selling to individual households instead.
And it kept us afloat. And it's not making a fortune, but it's just getting us through this crisis at the moment. We're kind of treading water, but we're not losing money. We're not making huge amounts of money, but we're getting by.
The reason he rang me that morning is because, having carefully built up a milk round where I live in London, he was now being forced to change his route. Almost overnight, certain roads had suddenly been closed to traffic.
And we started to see there were restrictions on us using the roads that were relevant to us to get the deliveries done. And we couldn't go down them. It's made us get up earlier. Which, to be honest, we are seasoned pros in this particular
game. It's kind of what I'd expect from a milkman, actually.
Yeah, well, you know... Getting
Kieran told me that the council had used emergency powers to block roads and create more traffic-free streets. To Kieran, the opposite was happening. And he, along with other drivers, were being forced into long queues on the roads that were still open.
And the only, if they was thinking of it stopping pollution, they've got to have a rethink about it, because all these cars sitting in queues, chugging away with their petrol and diesel engines going, will just quite simply add to the pollution. And that will not be a green issue.
These road closures are happening to create low traffic neighbourhoods, and they're appearing across the country, not just where I live. The aim is to reduce levels of pollution, but they provoked fury and anger amongst some residents.
I haven't walked in a demonstration since the Iraq War.
Really? So this is your first time at a demonstration since 2003?
Yes, 2003. I feel really strongly about this.
There is a war being waged against local communities. They've made it harder to see your loved ones, harder to make a living, harder to do day-to-day things.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, how closing roads to traffic is dividing neighbourhoods. Peter Walker, you're a political reporter for The Guardian, but you have a specialist interest in writing about something away from Westminster, don't you?
I have a second life, and some people, when they meet me, think that's all that I do, because in some ways it gets more attention than the politics reporting. Quite a long time ago, I helped co-found The Guardian's bike blog, which is a blog about kind of everyday cycling rather than sports riding. And then a couple of years ago, I turned that into a book, which was basically an argument for why more everyday cycling is good for nations and for people and things like that. So yes, it's this kind of secondary area.
So you've been thinking then about how we use our roads in this country for quite a long time, which is why I wanted to speak to you about low traffic neighbourhoods. First of all, what are they?
A low traffic neighbourhood is something that's been around for quite a long time. I mean, in Britain even, they've been introduced in various forms like this since the 70s or 80s.
What happens when you close down a high street? This was once the main road from London to Bath. Through traffic now goes on the M4. Local traffic has a road of its own and multi-storey car parks behind these shops over here. Shoppers have to walk up to half a mile. And if it rains, well, they get wet.
And it's just something as straightforward as blocking off a road, normally a residential road, for through motor traffic. So cars and lorries and vans can still get to all the addresses on the street. They can't just necessarily drive all the way through it as a rat run. However, it's a kind of filtered block. So rather than having just a complete block across the road, there'll be more likely bollards, or in the modern version, like a kind of wooden planter with plants in it. So pedestrians and particularly people on bikes can just slip through. And the idea is to make the kind of rat running traffic through residential streets less easy for motorists, on the hope that they do it a bit less.
Why do we need to do this, Peter? Is this really important right now? And is it urgent, actually?
It is urgent, and there's all sorts of reasons why. I mean, car travel has become the default in not only the UK, but many, many others, almost all developed nations. But the whole thing is that whilst getting rid of the car overnight, obviously you live in the countryside, it's not going to work. But a really, really high proportion of journeys tend to be a single person driving quite a short distance, whether a mile or two, which in a lot of cases could be done on foot or public transport or by bike. And the amount of urban car traffic we have causes all sorts of problems. I mean, there's almost too many to count. There's a pollution problem, which kills. I mean, it's difficult to say how many people die early because of specifically pollution from cars and vans and trucks, but it's probably in the tens of thousands every single year. You obviously have the much more, rather the even more existential threat of the climate emergency. You have the social cost. You have the fact that if there's a busy road, then study after study has shown that communities become less of a place where people live. There's been all sorts of studies over the decades which show if you live on a busy road, you're much less likely to kind of know your neighbours. All this stuff disproportionately affects poorer people who are less likely to own a car. And then the final point is it's something that's not really remarked about much, and that's people leading physically inactive lives. The estimates in the UK is 100,000 people a year die early due to complications of inactive living. And the way we transport ourselves is a massively important part of that.
In theory then, Peter, LTNs seem like a really good idea. And the government seemed to think so back in May when the Transport Secretary Grant Shapps gave councils £250 million to make cycling and walking easier as lockdown restrictions were eased.
Pop-up bike lanes, wider pavements, cycle and bus-only streets, all examples of what people will start to see more of.
And so LTNs have appeared across the country, mostly in London. But they haven't been popular with everyone, have they?
Well, if you were to ask people, you know, do you want fewer cars driving on your street? Pretty much everyone would say yes. And the idea of an LTN as a kind of concept is a very, very good one. But they have run into a lot of opposition for all sorts of reasons.
Welcome to BBC London. I'm Alpa Patel. Protests are being held in several boroughs across London against what's known as low traffic neighbourhood trials, or LTNs. They were introduced last month to encourage more.
Anger against LTNs has spread online and out into the streets. Back in October, this protest in Hackney drew over 100 people frustrated by the changes they felt the closures were making to their lives.
My windowsills are thick with a black soot that didn't exist before. I mean, I've literally just put my flat on the market for rental because it's so
because
horrific.
Of the road?
Yeah.
Really? So because of the road
genuinely
closure, you are now, after 8 years of living here, putting your flat?
Genuinely.
Okay, my name is Councillor Simcha Steinberger. I'm the deputy leader of the Conservative Party in Hackney, also the chief whip. I'm a councillor in Springfield Ward, and I think this is absolute chaos what they're doing to Hackney. I came now down to the town hall. A drive that's supposed to take a quarter of an hour took nearly an hour. The amount of pollution going on has never been like that. The safest way to go in COVID is a car. Both the government and the NHS have said that.
We are here as law-abiding citizens, and we are here to exercise our right to protest these road closures. So let's make
some noise. Well, basically, one of my parents is 81 years old. Due to this pandemic, he's not allowed to go out. So when he needs his shopping done, what used to be a 10-minute journey is now half an hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah, and it's not something that you can do on foot or on a bike.
Well, no, because what am I going to do? Put them on my back.
And do you support more initiatives in the borough to make it cleaner, make it greener?
I support more consultation. That's it in a nutshell. I went to bed, I woke up the next morning, my road was blocked off.
Councils have used experimental traffic orders to close roads, which means they don't need to ask residents first, but instead can see what everyone thinks of them in practice. This has fuelled a lot of the anger against LTNs in Hackney. It's become such a divisive issue that it's even resulted in John Burke, a Labour councillor responsible for implementing the scheme, being sent a death threat.
It's clear that somebody in my case was motivated to tell me that they were going to hurt my wife and children and burn my home to the ground while I slept. I can't even kind of elaborate on some of the other things that were said. But, you know, my great hero and Iron Bevan said there can be no immaculate conception of socialism. And I didn't expect that there wouldn't be people who are absolutely committed to doing exactly what they want, where they want, when they want, that, you know, wouldn't feel put out, to say the least, by a politician telling them that they can no longer do that.
People who oppose these LTNs say that one of the big problems is that no one was consulted. Is that true?
Okay, so the reason I favour experimental traffic orders with concurrent consultation is because it allows for more meaningful engagement in the consultation process. When you undertake prior consultation, noisy, vocal groups of people who are opposed to change will, as we've experienced, engage in, you know, campaigns that border on the dissemination of misleading information to people. And I think it's only fair that we should give everyone an opportunity locally to experience how a low traffic neighbourhood functions.
If in 18 months, the end of the consultation period, it's found that most people in Hackney, or most people who've responded, don't want the LTNs, will they just come out?
Absolutely not, because we'll make a decision on whether or not to retain low traffic neighbourhoods based on a variety of factors, you know, of which public opinion is only one. I mean, I can't think of a category of person who opposes LTNs, barring perhaps some of the people who live on main roads. And again, for those people, I think it's tricky at the moment because I think they've gotten used to much quieter lockdown roads.
Yes.
And are comparing the roads today, you know, with what they experienced in lockdown. And my ambition is to get them to experience roads like that in the future all the time, because, you know, we have some of the highest mortality rates associated with pollution in the country. And we must also remember that we've had children medically assessed in Hackney with stunted lungs from the particulate matter they're breathing in. And that's not just from the tailpipes of motor vehicles overwhelmingly. It's from the road wear and the brake wear and the tyre wear associated with the operation of motor vehicles. Since 2009, the number of miles driven on Hackney's roads have increased by 40 million a year.
40 million?
That's
Why
a lot.
Is that?
10 years worth of real terms fuel duty cuts, the creation of sat nav technology and kind of wayfinding apps on people's phones, which have effectively turned London's neighbourhoods into bypasses. And because it has never been cheaper to operate a motor vehicle in the United Kingdom than it is today.
I mean, people do say, and I know you'll be familiar with this argument as well, that low traffic neighbourhoods disproportionately disadvantage poorer, more working class people in areas, yeah, and that they benefit richer areas.
I find it a bit galling to see people use working class people like me as cover for their desire to keep things the way they were before.
You think that's what's happening?
Well, listen,
here,
working class people are disproportionately impacted in public health terms and in road safety terms by the dominance of motor vehicles on our roads, and so are people from ethnic minority backgrounds.
Coming up, why, despite protests, low traffic neighbourhoods might be here to stay. Peter, this is complicated, isn't it? It's clear from speaking to John why LTNs are a good thing, but the arguments I heard from people at the protest, that their streets are more polluted, that friends who are disabled say they can't get around as easily, these are very persuasive points, aren't they?
They are, but people who are in favour of LTNs will say that, A, those problems have been around for a long time, and that scrapping LTNs won't necessarily make them better. I mean, pollution levels in a lot of cities in the UK, particularly London, have been above legal levels for a number of years. And one of the arguments by anti-LTN groups is that introducing LTNs pushes traffic onto main roads, and that increases pollution levels there, and poorer people are disproportionately more likely to live on main roads. All of this is true, but it's always been the case. And, you know, there is a slight scepticism about why some of these groups weren't protesting about illegal pollution levels before it also affected their own roads. So it's very, very complicated. I mean, the one thing I'd also point out is that a lot of the anti-LTN groups will say that people with disabilities are particularly impacted by this. But if you talk to disability groups, they really, really don't like being kind of used as a pawn in this way. There is one disability group which particularly works with disabled people who use like trikes or bikes or things like that. There's a charity called Wheels for Wellbeing. And they say that, you know, much as the able-bodied population is a completely different mix of people, disabled people are very, very different. And some of them find they can only drive, but a lot of them actually find it much easier to get around on a bike or a trike. And if that's the case, then having fewer cars is like better.
So despite the fact then that it seems more people potentially are in favour of LTNs, these protests have forced some councils to change their approach on these schemes, haven't they?
So this has happened mainly in London so far. Wandsworth Council in southwest London has pulled the plug on all its LTN schemes.
They're calling it People Power. This is Wandsworth Council removing planters they only installed last month.
Lewisham Council in southeast London has got rid of some of the schemes. And I think buoyed by that, quite a few of the other anti-LTN groups are thinking, well, you know, if we push very, very hard and make enough noise, then, you know, these will go too. And the weird thing is often conservative councils and conservative councillors who are, in effect, going against what the Conservative central government wants them to do, because Number 10 are very keen on this.
Well, they are very keen on this. On Friday, Grant Shapps announced another £175 million will be given to councils to spend on things like LTNs and bike lanes, warning them that they shouldn't be derailed in their plans by protesters. He went on to say that LTNs are generally popular, but what evidence is there to show that they actually reduce the number of cars on our roads?
I mean, the evidence is quite difficult in the sense that it depends what an LTN is. An LTN on its own, if you just have modal filtering where you don't have through car traffic on, say, two or three roads, then the indications are that just shifts the traffic onto the next road. So it has to be part of a sufficiently coherent and wide program of this sort of thing, along with kind of other measures like safe bike lanes and things like that. And the evidence is, if it's done properly, then you do over time, and the caveat is over time, get a shift towards cycling and walking. But, you know, at the same time, individual LTN protesters could potentially have a point if their scheme, as designed by the council, is not very good. But, you know, the argument of people who support these things is, if it's not working, then it's an argument to do more rather than less.
Just finally, Peter, more widely, how important is it then when making changes to improve the environment to bring everyone along with us? Or do we have to accept there needs to be some disagreement along the way?
I think you have to accept that not everybody is going to go along with it, because these are upsets to a vested interest, which certainly in Britain's towns and cities have been in place for 60 or 70 years. You know, the idea of getting into a car and driving to the shop in an urban area a mile away has not been the norm for adults now, but for their parents and probably even for their grandparents. And it's very, very rare to have a situation, for example, like the first lockdown in the UK, where there were people who opposed it, but in general, the consensus was pretty broad and people generally went along with it. You know, this was something that was framed as a national emergency. So I think if politicians want to do it, they have to continue making the argument. But at some point, I think they also have to accept that some people will be really, really vehemently against it. And as long as they've kind of consulted and or polled and or otherwise tried to work out how widespread this negative sentiment is, if they're satisfied that the majority of people are either happy with it or not bothered either way, then, you know, again, the caveat is, it's easy for me, who's never been elected to anything, to say this. But they just have to show a bit of political bravery and a bit of a long vision and just do it. But obviously a lot of people would disagree with me.
Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That was Peter Walker. Read his coverage of the low traffic neighbourhood debate at theguardian.com. And also look out for his book coming out in January, all about the importance of exercise, called The Miracle Pill: Why the Sedentary World Has Got It All Wrong. Also this week, The Guardian is running a mini-series called Green Streets, which will analyse the benefits of low-traffic neighbourhoods and ask what our public spaces should be used for. Find it all on the website. That's all for today. Thank you to Kieran, John Burke, all the protesters and Peter for speaking to me today. This episode was produced by me and Elizabeth Cassin. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.